Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's grown to hate you. And she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This December 22nd, 2015 edition, episode 69 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from the Mud Hut in southern New Mexico. And that's where Guy is, and I'm in Mule Creek, New Mexico. Our thanks to Afrozen for his theme song contribution, and you can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. This week, we're joined by Mark Austin, a former student of Guy's at the University of Arizona and more recently a government contractor and truth teller. For the past 14 years, Mark has worked in several capacities for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security since its inception. His past 2 years have been with the National Nuclear Security Consequence Management Team. Mark's father is a former United States congressman.
Thanks, Mike. Before we introduce Mark, though, I'd love for you to read a bit from your latest essay for the Good Men Project. It was published a few days ago on December 20th, 2015. It's titled, World Climate Change Conference Confirms Near-Term Human Extinction.
Thanks, Guy. The article reads, recently at COP21, Paris Climate Conference, the leaders of the world sealed the deal on human history. I wasn't under any illusion that any agreement would, quote-unquote, save humankind. I also realized that climate change isn't just about those of us who live in the dominant industrial culture. What happened in Paris at the climate conference only confirms the insanity of a culture built upon infinite growth on a finite planet. It confirmed our predicament. Our current living arrangement is killing us and everything in its path, and there's little to nothing we can do about it. World leaders agreed to try and keep the pre-industrial baseline temperature from rising above 1.5 degrees Celsius. Currently, we're already at around 1 degree above pre-industrial levels. Of course, this agreement is non-binding and does not keep fossil fuels in the ground. What this agreement does is simply kick the can down the road. In reality, billions of us cannot see that it's just not fossil fuels that must be abandoned, but civilization itself. Whoa, civilization? Yes. Simply replacing fossil fuels with renewables doesn't stop the mindset that infinite growth on a finite planet is possible. It is not. Today we add about 228,000 people on the planet, births minus deaths, and we owe this to our infinite growth mentality. Today we push nearly 200 species towards extinction daily. Today upwards of 90% of the large fish in the oceans are gone. Today we've dammed most of the world's rivers. Today polar ice caps are melting and sea levels are rising. Today, we care more about our economy than the planet that supports it. Today, we are already dead. We just don't realize it yet. Those are strong words, but nothing in our behavior, nor the facts on the ground, prove otherwise. We will go the way of the dodo by the same hand that sent it packing. We can leave this planet with our current legacy intact, or we can fight for something larger than ourselves for once. This is not a call to sit back and do nothing. Instead, it's carte blanche to do something else, anything else. It's a golden ticket to live instead of just making a living. It's a chance to rise up and be heard without absolutely nothing to lose. We can leave this planet with our current legacy intact, or we can fight for something larger than ourselves for once. How can we get started? Well, we can begin by listening to those who have never been born into the industrial culture. We can start by listening to those who have been marginalized and oppressed by such a culture. We can begin by mentally and then physically moving away from this deadly culture. When you live in a death-phobic culture, one comes to understand that killing everything in sight is how we put off the inevitable. We fear the other without realizing we are the other. We think of nature and the other as separate. We live our lives in a compartmentalized state of disconnection. All COP21 did was confirm that we get what we deserve when it comes to our leadership and how the planet reacts to such leadership. Even former NASA climate scientist James Hansen called the conference a fraud. Remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, nature bats last. Enjoy the ballgame.
Thanks, Mike. I'd be hard-pressed to come up with a more cogent overview than yours, especially in such few words.
Well, thank you, and thanks to those who have been sharing it, and please continue to share it. And after the new year, I'll actually be probably posting regularly on the Good Men Project every Sunday. And we'll be talking about things that are on the show and trying to connect those things we do every Tuesday as well. All right, getting to our guest. Our guest is Mark Austin. He worked for the Department of Homeland Security since its inception, most recently focusing on nuclear power facilities as well as part of the National Nuclear Security Consequences Management Team. The National Office of Nuclear Nonproliferation works closely with a wide range of international intelligence agencies, the U.S. national laboratories, and the private sector to safeguard and or dispose of dangerous nuclear and radiological material. Analysts also track the proliferation of related WMD technologies that threaten nuclear power systems. In 2016, Mark begins working on the DARPA-connected biogenetic project that is in development and is proposed to reformat human existence. Pentagon planning for the potential impacts of abrupt climate change include technologies and methods that are unimaginable now, as the Manhattan Project was before the creation of the first atomic bomb. On the brink of extinction, quote-unquote, applied molecular evolution may take a sudden leap on this shifting planet. Welcome, Mark Austin, to Nature Bats Last in the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you, Mike. I just enjoyed listening to your your whole intro there. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And hello, Dr. Guy McPherson, of course.
Well, let's start with Guy. Let's start a little bit with your background and your path, and where did you meet the good doctor?
August 2006, he taught the University of Arizona a sustainability class. I actually still think I have a copy of a book that he taught from, which was The Endgame. And it was he was a little controversial even back then at the University of Arizona. I think he taught at Berkeley before that, briefly.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just made a great impression. He had field trips with his class and a lot of very interesting things. And my father was on the board of the university, and they actually wanted to ask me some questions about Guy and everything else. And I just found myself really on his side about everything, and I continue to be that way to this day.
Right on. So go ahead, Guy.
You recently abandoned ship after 14 years as a government contractor with Department of Homeland Security. So can you give us a few highlights from your time in the nation's capital?
Oh, sure, a few highlights. I actually prepared two things, which is more like I thought something controversial and something that it hasn't quite been covered in all of your extinction coverage. And that was, of course, when you work in one department, you tend to look a lot, 14 years and into radiation and decommissioning and the different projects that we're always on. But you always, as an analyst, get interested in what else is going on. So, of course, I really started looking into biodefense and what a few of the dangers are there and things that could happen, and also maybe even a good way to depopulate the world. According to, I shouldn't say America, I'm not allowed to say that at all, multinational corporate partnerships, which I feel very strongly, lots of evidence that really underneath everything, Russia, China, Venezuela, all countries are very corporately connected. ExxonMobil, one of the largest number one companies in the world, has a position in every single country on earth. And that's nothing compared to Saudi Aramco, which is, I think, 11 times more powerful, but it's privately held. So you get an idea.
Absolutely.
You know, ExxonMobil just advertised for a position, somebody who will connect the dots on climate change. And so I'm thinking about going that route. But they're looking for solutions, and I'm not sure that's going to work out for me.
Probably not.
Like, after the Nature Conservancy didn't work out for you, I mean, it did work out, but...
ExxonMobil is just one step in the same direction from the Nature Conservancy, really. They might think otherwise.
I would mention that, to get directly to Guy, because there's so much that went on in Washington, it's a broad question when you asked that. I was ready for more specifics. Steve Aoki, something that's just happened was the our NNSA department split exactly as I during my last weeks into newer divisions. Actually, if you go to their website, you'll see all about the kind of like an amoeba splitting into more divisions. But in the previous year, a few people were very strong about wanting more information, more broadcasts about the dangers of the entire grid melting down. It's something that we've covered. It's been covered by other people. I got chastised for something on your website that Guy is the one who brought it up, but I just have to say Guy is the only public figure that we noticed was really making some impact on the warnings of what happens when 400 or actually it'll be soon 500 nuclear plants melt down. So we were thankful for that, and I am, and that's when Guy kind of came back on the radar. Of course, Steve Aoki was the first to see it, and he brought it up, and I said, oh, my goodness, I know him. So he was a professor. I know him. He was interesting. And so you really came back on the radar inside the department last year, and I really picked up on it. Even though it came from other people, I said, let's try to – we got somebody. They don't even listen. No one seems to want to come to the government websites, obviously. We're not that interesting. So Guy's a minor celebrity to some degree, so I was like, good, here's somebody that people are listening to. This is a global threat, especially with climate change. And this, the Pentagon and many other departments do back your words. There's no, if we could have had the visit in Washington, there's even a display room in the Pentagon about climate change is a mitigating factor to hot wars, so and of course a bit of a joke, but like the war on climate, how they're also what their solutions are, which kind of makes me laugh. You roll your eyes and go, and some people on the public tour, I'm sure, can call in and tell you they've seen this. They don't always include it on every tour. I don't know. Also, the Smithsonian has a Hall of Extinction, sponsored by the Koch brothers, but that shows you where there's sometimes rapid leaps, technological breakthroughs, even when the climate was going the other way, like getting really cold, ice ages coming on, bottlenecks, everything that you know. I don't want to add anything here that everyone doesn't know. It just shows that from many aspects, from the museums all the way through the Pentagon, climate change is a very big factor.
Right, right.
So I was scheduled, you put a bunch of effort actually into arranging some speaking venues for me, and then after you put all that work into it, it sort of fell through, and I never quite got the details. Can you fill us in a little bit?
Yes, gladly.
Including all the name-calling, because that's my favorite part.
All right. I know. People like gossip, don't they? I mean, it's the truth. It's not gossip. As I'll back up just quickly, yes, I really got behind you and saying, well, I knew you, and so I kind of took things from Steve and Deborah and other people in the department and said, okay, I'm going to go, let's start. First time ever, I've been very quiet, except for maybe back in 2002, and then a little bit of social media in 2010, but we all really, it's kind of like very quiet. Everyone just talks to each other in Washington. Talk in the cafeterias, talk to all the different departments. But the idea of actually starting to make comments and get out there, I said, no, Guy is somebody that we could maybe connect with other people about the importance, especially of if there's abrupt climate change, how dangerous the mass nuclear meltdowns would be. Really, that's going to create an extinction. So Dan Utek, who's the chief climate advisor to the White House, and other people were, I really kind of took the ball and ran around and said, look at guy, sending little emails and, of course, your YouTube videos, and kind of hounded everybody until they said yes. The unfortunate part was I was in Vermont working on the Yankee Entergy power plant decommissioning, a whole bunch of us, at the exact time that I had gotten a yes from the Koshland Science Center, which is a really important one. They're the best one that we have in Washington that has climate change. It's all kind of interactive exhibits and so on. So the Koshland was very prestigious. They looked at you. They knew my credentials, et cetera, and they said, yes, good, okay, book a room, have him come speak. And I got a number of things all organized, as the guy knows, right down to the Pentagon, Marriott, et cetera. And because I wanted this to happen, I've always been a subordinate person. I'm somebody that has assisted everybody. I don't really talk a lot. I usually keep my nose down and just arrange things and write reports. And we advise. We're not public. Right. So my being a little bit public, wanting to do something public, was a little unusual. In fact, I've never spoken on the radio before, so you guys, I'm actually a little nervous. Excuse me.
All right. Woo-hoo.
But while I was in Vermont and very busy there, I even met Bernie Sanders, pictures, and someone from NBL, Lydia, and many other things. I left a staff member, a backup person, actually, so other people, because it was August, were on vacation. And guy had a little bit of a problem understanding exactly where to do the Pentagon tour. I just needed a pass for him to take him through, actually along with his wife. And I told someone else to just take care of it. And it went through, I don't know if I should say her name or not. I'm going to call her D. Because okay. I didn't really think about whether I should say how much it's going to blow back on me. I want to just say D was looked into things, and she says, "Oh no, this guy is a radical. He's against empire," which you are, and I'm fine with it. In fact, I was already starting to piss people off with some of my snarky comments because I was new. It was in my last year, and really, I've got some very big aggravations. Big stuff goes on in Washington. There's 1,000 different departments, as people might know. It's a complex system there. Right. So she really looked into Guy, because I was wanted this all paid for on my consultant budget. We have consultants that cost much more. It's nothing I'd saved. I hadn't used a consultant in a while, and I legitimately believe that Guy consulting on the dangers of abrupt climate change impacting the nuclear system is a legitimate thing. However, she really said, specifically, I even wrote some notes here, some of her ideas were, Sal Alinsky and so on, and Oliver North and Iran-Contra, Fast and Furious, financing of ISIS right now and Al-Qaeda and so on. She says, oh, no, if any of this is done on a consultancy budget, something goes wrong, and then they'll have people blowing the whistle in our department for bringing in a radical. They even dare to call a guy an eco-terrorist. I know you're not. Excuse me. I'm just trying to explain the other. There are some very, very, I don't know what to call them. I don't know, extreme right Republican type people there. Rah-rah America. So, I was in Vermont, and so that really was hard to deal with it and explain and just make, smooth things over. So the best thing I could do by the time I got back was just, unfortunately, to tell guys that we'd have to let it go. And I was very, very upset with the department. That really made me end working there. I was going to end anyway, but I definitely wasn't going to. They've been very kind. They offered me another 2-year contract, and I've took a definitely a different deal.
Right. Well, it seems to me, at least, from being an outsider of this, because you and Guy were involved, mainly you, that the word radical has been hijacked by a culture and is completely turned around. Whereas, you know, we think of it as trying to find the root to an issue, in searching for the root, and it's kind of been turned and twisted because it's associated with terrorism now. And you know, you say the word radical, and radical thinking goes right out the window, and right away you think about people that are, you know, using guns and blowing things up, and it's obviously it's in Washington as well, because we hear it from our politicians, and now we're hearing it from analysts and so on. So it seems to me that word radical is really a pariah.
And what can get more radical than Lamar Smith attacking all of our science departments, Mitch McConnell, right. James Imhoff? I mean, these are radical, right. And when you guys get after and you do a great job, and I really, of course, am against Hansen for what the nuclear issue, the him saying that was the way to go, of course, it's just, sometimes, though, I find we're being critical of people on our kind of on our own side, and it's like, oh, can we really go after? We got some really bad people here.
Yeah, you know, go ahead, guy.
What most people fail to realize is that radical means to get to the root of, and a radical is somebody who gets to the root. In fact, that little square root symbol we learned in ninth grade is called a radical because it gets to the root. It takes the root of something. So it's interesting that the language, Orwellian style, has been co-opted, and it's doublespeak.
Oh, and your mentions of anarchy too are good. I mean, people don't listen. They misinterpret. They fly through something and they go, oh, I mean, one of the things that D said was anarchist. You know, he claims for, let's have anarchy. And the whole idea was, can Guy advise people and tell people to prepare for abrupt climate change? There's a lot of reasons that even I dare say, I'm, as far as I can tell, even Obama was paid a little attention to Guy via Dan and said, yes, okay, this is kind of important. Let's get some, you know, how someone with some credentials to mention something at the Koshland would be good. But then people just jump on the idea also of anarchy. It was just unfortunate. It was, and I wasn't actually there to politically, I don't know, put a cap on it. And none of it probably would have happened if I just had just managed to talk directly with Guy and wasn't so busy and Bernie Sanders and dealing with a big decommissioning deal. And if I just waited, I probably shouldn't have done any of this until September, until I was back. But I like Guy, and I really wanted to, he'd mentioned it, and I had already not taken care of things. Took me a little while. I think he and I started talking about this back in June or July. So I thought by August, I said, oh my goodness, I've got to. And when some of the other pieces all came into place and I typed it all up to him and airlines and everything, it was just down to the last details, and then it all blew up on me.
Yeah. Well, I think it shows exactly how powerful the dominant narrative is. You start saying words like radical and anarchy and anarchists, and that's outside of the narrative, and that those things frighten people, and they don't think of what those things actually could mean. It's just what they've become in our culture, and it's kind of outside and against the current narrative that we keep living out day to day.
Yes, Mike, and I will mention a direct name who's actually just recently in the Huffington Post, or probably the Washington Post, and the Huffington Post picked it up, et cetera, Ed Parson. The Office of Science and Technology Policy to the White House. Now, Ed is someone I'm going to go ahead and publicly say I believe is pretty much against Guy. Ed is very strong on technology is going to get us out of this. Technology, geoengineering, all kind of projects, and there's also plenty of time. A big thought process for most people is there's 100 years. 2050 even is the beginning of things. I dare say that we are so, in some ways, technologically proficient. You think about CERN, the largest machine on Earth, the Large Hadron Collider. I was there in 2009 on an energy project. The intermagneto internal fusion energy. Tri-Alpha, Lockheed Martin, and so on. I mean, it's just incredible, some of the breakthroughs in other divisions. So when you look at that, and they were so used to it in ways that you begin to take it for granted, that something like carbon scrubbers and the carbon sponge that's just come out and all these other things are just, right. just you know, will handle it so easily. So, and I do believe all the way up at the highest level, Commander-in-Chief, mm-hmm. overall, when you're so hammered with so many things, you kind of say, okay, yes, I'm going to make a big, but who knows if the next administration, what they're going to do, probably not care at all. But
right.
he cares, but also it seems like they say at some point, okay, we'll take it for granted. Especially when you have other advisors like Ed Parson and so on, who,
sure.
Who are hammering on like, oh, good heavens, this is nothing. We've got time and we've got technology. Like, it's an amazing technology, some of which you guys don't even know are coming out. They're in other divisions.
Right.
But they are really groundbreaking. In fact, there's actually a department called the Breakthrough Energy Coalition.
Right.
So, not that I'm supporting this. I think it could be a big mistake to turn a blind eye and assume we're, you know. And also, how do you, guy? Sorry, one more thing. Biggest thing is for me, and this is really controversial. Thank God I'm not working now. Overpopulation and heat engine. Consumption. Mm. So what if we have other energies, or we run everything on, and there's the heat vacuum, which is now in popular science and so on. You can deflect heat back out into space.
Right.
But how are you still going to feed on a, you know, is infinite growth idea on a finite planet? It's all of it still doesn't work out, no matter what we invent. I don't see, unless you're willing to have some kind of reduced quality population.
Right. Well, it's just a big game of Jenga. You just keep doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for different results.
Yeah.
So, Guy, jump in. What do you think?
Yeah. Getting more specific, we hear a lot about various threats faced by the industrialized world, and that's really where almost everybody in the dominant narrative is thinking, and certainly the president and his advisors are thinking about the various threats to the industrialized world. Because keeping the machine going is everything. That goes without question. It's never a question. So terrorism tops the list for the mainstream media, but there are natural disasters and a world war that make the cut. So what, in your opinion, are the truly important threats to civilization and also to human life on Earth? Because those might, in fact, be inextricably connected at this point.
Yeah, and for listeners, I have put all this for the last 2 weeks preparing for this show. Two posts per day went a little crazy on Guy's thing, so you can go back and look through the last three articles by Guy and see underneath them the comments. I put some extensive background so I can be prepared to talk about this. And Mike, when we're done talking, I will put it in comments below this show when it gets, the podcast goes up, so
great,
people can
great,
go
thank
to
you.
Some direct links. The number one concern that I would have of all things would be the $5.6 billion new biodefense budget. Within the biodefense budget, we have things like Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah and seven other labs. All this is very new compared to even the nuclear safety, the grid, hacking into the grid. We have companies that do not always report, dare I say FPL and others, that when there are attacks on the nuclear grid, sometimes they don't even want to report it to the federal level, so that's big.
Sure.
But the biggest thing, the one that could really take out, and this might be good too, though. I mean, it's a very complicated thing. The thing that might take out 6 billion people, and this can also go back to 2012. If you remember Obama, the administration, there was a big brouhaha about the N1H1 genetic sequence and letting it be published, and should they, and of course how that could be healthy in one way for the CDC and for stopping a pandemic, it was useful, but also it could be given to many other countries to be, once you have the sequence, you could also weaponize it, and weaponizing everything. So there is very much, and which I covered a lot on Guy's site, it just sounds, it's the evidence that, not including in America, in the past, I can't, you know, there have been 239 different cases where biologics have been tested, such as in the New York subway, in San Francisco, in Minnesota. It's all covered. And then, by the way, anyone just Google it, you know, or use any website, I should say, Yahoo it, whatever you want. And you can read up on all this sort of stuff. It is now public knowledge. So, and that's the Army doing it on Americans in their own country. So do not think that it wouldn't be tested, right? Within, you know, Chinese to do it on their own people and so on and so on. The next level is having a other country who could really use the agricultural land, who Americans are very feisty and hard to control, and I'm going to set off people. This is not me saying it. Don't come kill me, please. It's just that from the point of view of, let's say, when some leaders get together and they say, all right, who do we eliminate? Who uses the most energy? Who's got the most lifestyle? And who are the hardest? Who's not going to cooperate? Well, unfortunately, North Americans have got a bad reputation of not listening, such as you could have some people in China who would listen to the leader. And mm-hmm. I've been to Russia a couple times, and they're still clear about it. I mean, they're feisty people too. But they, one tour guide when I was going through the Hermitage, said, you know, we're still not used to being really that free. We still tend to need a strong leader to tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. So if they were going to eliminate a population, the American population, unfortunately, from very big perspectives would be, and I'm only saying this because there's a lot of analysis on it. It with the RAND Corporation, ALEC, the Atlantic Council, this has been going on and on. It is updated many times. Just in case, like another version of what could they do and would they do. So it could all be verified.
Right. So basically on their own people is really what you're saying.
As is well known, the 239 other cases in America alone, because we're in America and we're talking, I'm assuming, generally.
Right, but yeah, we're talking larger. We're talking a much larger number. They're willing to potentially to take that leap to wipe out their own entire population.
Since I'm actually quoting from a real report that really exists, and multiple, and it gets updated constantly, the first population that they would probably take out would be all 300 and 13 million Americans would probably, almost including me, and anybody else, Western Europeans, so on. The people that would go first would be here, and it would be. Since we're talking about extinction, I'm just throwing this in because I don't know if you. I listened to all your shows. I've read everything on Guy's website and the comments all the way back to when he first started the website. So I was just trying to think, what can I bring to this that's a little different that someone haven't, and then it's verifiable if people want to follow up on this. Some of it started in Rio with a nice agenda, the Agenda 21. How would you have small agrarian populations and new settlements, you know, and everything's gone, and for a lot of reasons, including climate change. And they've continued to run with that ever since and revise it and update it and change it into something that many people would probably find very alarming.
Yeah, you're listening to Nietzsche Bass Last on the Progressive Radio Network. Mike and I are talking today with Mark Austin, former student of mine and longtime employee and contractor with the federal government, notably the Department of Homeland Security. Let's follow up on that same thread. According to a story at RT late last week, the U.S. military has conducted 16 clandestine tests with samples of anthrax and one experiment with bubonic plague since 2009. According to the report, this is happening in South Korea, where the United States military is actually testing these things on our so-called allies. Is that plausible? Can you vouch
thank
for the veracity
guy.
Of that story?
All I can say is thank you, something I really probably couldn't say. I'm allowed to mention all 239 other cases. I even put on your website some documents that connect to these type of things going on. I'm being semi-snowed in there. Luckily, even to protect myself, no one can click on them and actually get all the way into them, but just proof that this stuff does exist. Yes. They're in China and other countries are very actively demonstrating, working, developing some, and there is an idea that if things were to unravel very rapidly, maybe to suddenly do something like induce a depopulation event.
You know, you're saying this in your out loud voice, right?
Yes. Is that okay? I know.
I mean, well, yeah.
You guys are hearing me. I know the radio's lagging. I'm actually following your show, but I also hear everything's in the lag, so I had to move away from it.
I'm just wondering your level of concern and your, I mean, why I guess you're telling us this, or why you're telling this to the general public.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying some pretty radical stuff, and I mean that in the best possible way. You're still employable. You're still employed. You're not dead yet. So.
Oh,
what the hell?
Yeah, no, it's going to sound, my guess is that if things pass, nothing, abrupt climate change, something really big doesn't kick in, the methane clathrate gun does not continue to kick off, so on, this will not come to pass. The most immediate term, if this was to happen, could actually be like this summer. There's a little bit, and they give timing on it. Why? Why would this work? Why should we do this? I mean, the reports are very thorough. I did some of the analysis, too. I've written some of it. Why would we choose this time period? Why next year? Why certain years? How would this work? One of it is to protect the nuclear grid. If you have a mass depopulation event from a pandemic, induced pandemic, designed, you can, and they're very good at the labs of putting anthrax spliced with Ebola, AIDS, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, stuff you've never even heard of. I mean, it's genetic splicing to create the most virulent, incredible stuff, and there's no secret about any of that, really. If that got released, even by accident, the big question would be nothing will be habitable with 400 to 500 nuclear plants melting down. So there's a little bit of an edge. Who's got the edge on it to try to protect, because any kind of extinction that runs wild. Now, the other versions where you just have wars and nuclear war or limited nuclear wars between Pakistan and India and all these other scenarios, which we're always looking at, say to us, all right, you really, really, the radiation is probably the biggest kicker. It's the radiation each time if we don't. So if some leaders, and I wrote very much about why Xi Jinping on Guy's website, and I can repost it too for anyone else who wants to, but I put a whole article on there of our analysis of all world leaders, why he's the most powerful. He's got the most capability to do whatever he wants with less voter restriction, Congress things in the way. So, not that, again, I don't want to get assassinated by the Chinese. Not that anyone would do that, not that he would do that, but if they look at these reports and they at least have these plans to at least think about, along with all kind of other things, probably including just shopping at Gucci. It exists, and yeah, I'm blowing the whistle on it a little bit, because I personally, and that's one of the reasons I absolutely am not, I'm moving far, far south after I have a sailboat, I live on it. I sailed around the Pacific back in 91 through 93, and I'm pretty versed in how to get away, how to get way off the grid. So maybe some young people want to know. That's also the fact.
So thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Who's protecting whom? Is anybody being protected? Is the government taking any role in protecting or being concerned about the citizenry?
No, I'd say one of the biggest issues would be on the status quo. And again, this, I'm talking about something radical, a side element, something that could be released, could be done. And it's not even that secret. Anyone can actually dig up some of what I'm talking about. That's why it's not impossible for me to talk about it. On the big picture, no, just status quo forever. Some of this would only be enacted because somebody decided, oh, goodness, things are really going wrong. And as far as, let's just say, Charleston flooding or Chennai right now in India or this country or this whole island's going under, don't care. Business as usual. Doesn't matter. You can lose cities. You can lose whatever. Miami is going down actually already with the king tides, et cetera. Doesn't matter. To enact a very large and try to control it and deal with something, which probably won't work either. There's a lot of reasons in the analysis of how in the world would you really pull this off. Make it very clear, and I have made it very clear when I've added to it and sent it all around inside the administrations and other things, and probably for the Chinese to read as well, because they finance us very heavily. And on a international level, I mean, as far as the military-industrial complex sells weapons and energy and everything to everybody. They're all equal partners in what appears, and of course there's a little bit of standoff going on right now in the South China Sea. Of course, everyone knows this over the oil and the islands and airstrips that the Chinese have built and so sort of stuff, and of course Russia and other things. But when it really comes down to it, the highest levels, no, they look at each other and they have their little skirmishes and they're standing big skirmishes, and it's dangerous. And of course it could go very, very wrong. But I really think ultimately they're just concerned about themselves.
Wow, that's quite an admission.
Well, they even tell, here's one thing they say, do not tell people. Here's why. Information, this kind of information, equals protests, legal actions, restrictions to what we want to do or don't want to do, resistance. There's a whole list of stuff I was just given on Monday. You don't talk about this stuff and just let people know that astounding technological breakthroughs have full faith in the system. And but of course, China is building a new Hadron Collider. I'm assuming you know that. The largest, they want the biggest one ever. And it does mean that they know physics and they know chemistry and everything. So they're very smart. They know also about the impacts, the possibility of abrupt climate change. And business as usual until you can't. But before you absolutely can't, you don't want to lose 400 plants melting down. There may be a way to quickly eliminate a mass amount of the population, secure the plants. I mean, and by the way, it only takes about 1,000 people, say Chinese physicists, we have 100 plants. I can name them for you. I mean, we have right now on an NRC list, we have 100 operating plants in America. We have 18 new ones coming online. I got the whole list in front of me just in case anyone wants to ask. And, of course, you can see this anyway by going to the nrc.gov. And, of course, we have 15 being decommissioned in process, stages of decommissioning. So 15 going away, but out of those 15, for instance, like Fermi in Michigan, it's not really going away. It's just getting one reactor is getting it decommissioned so a new one can go in. So it's that kind of just that. There's a trade-off onto the list of 18 new ones. But
And how long are we talking about to safely, successfully, completely decommission any one of those nuclear power plants? We're not talking about something that's going to happen next week, right, and for no money.
No, you're absolutely right. As you said, as you have covered very well and our head, I'm sorry, Ernst Moniz, I think you talked to, head of DOE, 50 years, 60 years, but that's, as I have said on your website, money, they can milk it anything as long as possible. That's just part of business as usual. The fastest version, which is done, like for instance at Crystal River and other places, is 5 years at least for cask, for basically cooling, removing the rods, and going to cask and containment. Now, I'm not a nuclear physicist. I'm just a contractor. I deal with it. I have a lot of knowledge on this. But I'm not. But I do know that if you really had to, like, really whip at it, and you're not dealing with Fukushima, that's already a melted down mess. I mean, obviously, if you want to really go in the and let's just say the whole world was about to go down, an actual asteroid, rather than, you know, we are the asteroid, as you always say, and say one was coming, and we knew somehow, you need five years, I don't know how you would know that, 5 years in advance, but you could get it to a point that Earth could endure 400 to 500 plants if they were at least had a 5 year from removal through cooling to cask. That's the first 5 years are the most critical. Now, it doesn't mean it would ever get moved or the plant scrubbed down or the walls. And I mean, as you know, that can go on and on and on. And it can take as long as you want, too, to milk it. There's contractors and the money in it and so on. And studies like we do, and which is all very good. I am for safety studies and everything else. But let's just say you decided it was all very unsafe and it just has to go and it has to go fast. Five, maybe even seven. Maybe I should round up to seven. I'm maybe being over. You know, it already has happened. You can go from remove the rods, cooling for about 5 years, and into casking. And then if there was only 50,000 people left on Earth or something like that, they wouldn't have meltdowns. They'd have a radiation problem still in casks that they're going to have to figure out 1,000 years, 100 years from now. But as far as complete meltdowns happening because the systems that people just ran, as you know, they will go to their families. If there was a pandemic or limited nuclear war or other issues that were prepared for all the time, or hacking or EMP, well, then, of course, the biggest thing, the number one impact is going to be all these meltdowns, regional meltdowns. And we're barely prepared for a single meltdown, much less, let's just say, the entire Tennessee Valley. That's a big one. TVA, Watts Bar, all those plants. What if we lost four or five in a week,
right,
in the middle
right.
of America? And I'm totally authorized to talk about this. This is not. It's on our websites. We talk about. We've been trying to talk about it, and we thank Guy for talking about it.
Right. Just not the specific people.
What about the big one that already happened? What about Fukushima? Is it, what kind of threat does it pose to people in the Northern Hemisphere? You know, Helen Caldicott seems to think that it is an extinction-level event for humans.
I'm going to quickly interject that when I was born, my father sat in the Titan there in Green Valley, Tucson. He was actually an Air Force at Tyndall Air Force Base, and because of that, he got to take my mother to Vegas to see the 1961-62 nuclear tests. You remember they used to do above ground, people go see the mushroom clouds. It was fun. So I was born with some webbed fingers on my left hand, probably mutations right there. That's just from stuff we were doing here in America. My mom, right after my birth, got very involved with all these mothers that petitioned Kennedy to please stop the above-ground tests, which, of course, no one will do anything unless they wanted to, but it sounded good. If they want to hear you, then, like, great, a bunch of moms protesting because their babies are coming out bad. Well, then fine. If they don't care, they'll turn a deaf ear. And they did listen, and above-ground testing was stopped. And some of that led my father to run first for state Congress. He was an Arizona state congressman. And so on, and John McCain, and a lot of connections there. So is Helen right? Yeah, I mean, I'm born, and my mother was a nuclear activist. I mean, anti-nuke from. So my opinion is always going to be a little severe or radical, maybe that anti-nukes. Now on the other side, let's go back to Ed Parson. Ed Parson and the whole team is all about we can have safe. Salt reactors, thorium, and so on, right in everyone's backyard. We're going in the direction they'd like to have hundreds more. And I guess I'll be liberal enough to say, well, I guess if they're really safe, if you can prove it to me, I'm open-minded enough to say, all right. I mean, even if we had one very old, unsafe reactor in all the world, I'd be like, okay, I'd take that. I mean, I'm not so radical, but 400, and the Chinese are building new cheap ones, 500? Sorry, it just seems to be going way the wrong direction, especially for extinction-level event.
So do you get, I mean, at some point, you have to start thinking to yourself, I would think, that I'm working on some level with a bunch of lunatics.
Oh, I do. I'm sorry. You got me laughing now. I mean, that's why I'm sitting here. I'm actually going to be working on I posted all this on Guy's Side. I'm very open about all this.
Yeah.
Institute, New Energy System, actually Max Planck Institute, DARPA, the Brain Project, so on. AI, so that Botox future humans can live in, I don't know, Mars. It's fine with me. Whatever.
Yeah.
Good luck. If we don't have extinction, we'll have, I don't know, Botox robots who can live in a Venus-like atmosphere. I don't care. I mean, it's fine. In fact, I find it kind of interesting where technology could go. But yes, is it the lunatic part of ignoring infinite growth, tritanium mining? I mean, how are we going to make all these plasma TVs? How is, you know, sustainable living? I mean, this is back to Guy's course. I mean, and he taught it again, I believe, in 2000. December 2007 was the end of the course I took, but he did it again, I believe, the following year. And many other courses. It's not just him. I mean, we're not in a sustainable living situation. A good version of Agenda 21, yes, that's the original Rio version, yes, that would be sustainable. All the rest of this, no, it's nuts. And John, I mean, back to Ed, I'm sorry, Ed Parsons saying, yes, we're gonna make nuclear reactors for everyone's backyard. Hell with solar panels or whatever. And none of it matters if you don't have, of course, if you have, they want 10 billion people on Earth and so on. So, you know, heat engine, resources, eating cows, agriculture. And you guys have covered this really well, so I'm just on board with you. It's lunatics.
Again, I should point out that you're saying this in your out loud voice.
Yeah, no, I don't know. If I get in a huge amount of trouble, you guys will know. I will see what happens. I'm assuming not, because I went through my notes and I'm saying stuff that is verifiable and needs to be thought about. Now, of course, does that set people off? I mean, please, again, I'm just reporting as you are. I know how much trouble you've gotten into for being the messenger. I better not say that I approve or disapprove of anything. I am just being a messenger of stuff that if anyone wants to do a little digging, and I will provide links, and please go back. I already did ahead of this conversation. I can't, I'm like a good student, of course. I'm like, oh, gosh, I want an A. I'm going to go back in there and put all these little cases and things and also mind my business and only do 2 posts per day. And so it takes find the best two per day and put them on there. So, yeah, it's there.
So that leads into the next question. What, if anything, constrains your work? What kind of roadblocks do you encounter? Now, I'm sure you're not mentioning several things that are classified. You're only providing information that is readily available in the public domain. But is there something psychological? Is there something besides the security state that prevents you from extending your work beyond where it already goes?
No, I would have to say that 1980, roughly, when I went to USC and got my first degree, first level, you know, I had to, later on, I was doing graduate work and moving on up. I didn't actually finish my master's till Georgetown University. It took me forever to get the second level with all my mixed credits. But when I left Los Angeles, I worked in special effects. I worked for Steven Spielberg. I worked for Universal. I worked for James Cameron on Abyss. All my technological background first came from a decade in my 20s. Also, partly, first of all, just going to college and getting to work as an intern over at Universal. So in 1980 to 1990 was L.A., and it was virtual reality. It was development in Silicon Valley, Skywalker Ranch, ILM, all that sort of stuff. It gave me a background to work now, to do what I do now. Washington and Hollywood are very interconnected, plus I had pretty good science and computer orientation. And I worked for some people that are very, very famous and popular and good references. They still are to this day. Could luckily go back to work for any one of them. But I had this kind of break in 1990, and one of your people on NBL actually put my resume on the thing, so I have to admit, yes, I went actually all around Europe for that summer and made TV shows, kind of dumb stuff, because I wanted to be a director, but I also needed to kind of get away. And that's when I got back. Christmas specifically, 1990. So the New Year's Day, 1991, I sailed off. I just went off for a great big adventure around the Pacific. And I just am grateful for that now, because it hits me now that it's time. And talk about living excellence and what you say and walking away from empire. You have been such an influence. And maybe I'm a little too overly full of the dire situations. I've worked, you can't fill your head with the reports and analysis and how many energy sites I've been to. I've taken like 200 trips to problematic areas in the last 14 years. So it's time to say, oh my God, I really think they're going to do this. I mean, so I felt very, and I'll probably look like Chicken Little and an alarmist, of course, if they don't.
I've been called worse.
Right.
And we have to wrap right there. Thanks, Mark Austin, for joining us on Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you.
And we will spend next week having Q&A focused just on this show. So listeners, listen to it a few more times and come up with questions, and we'll have a conversation.
Thank you again, very much, Mark. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that about wraps it up for this week. Remember, you can listen to us now on Stitcher.com. So if you're having trouble on your device, go to Stitcher, STITCHER.com, and download our episodes there. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM, and feel free to post questions. And again, next week's show, we will answer questions and do Q&A from this week's show, which was fascinating. My mouth is open most of the show. We'll see you on the radio next Tuesday then at 3 p.m. Eastern. And if you missed the show, make sure to find us in the archives on iTunes. Thanks again to our guest Mark Austin and to Afrizen for his music. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end,
nature bats last.
Nah. Mother.